let's go up to our ring announcer.
The following podcast is scheduled for one episode and is our vantage point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast.
Outside, we couldn't see it from our vantage point.
Wrestling fans, and welcome back to our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast. This is episode number 23, and it is Monday, the first day of spring, finally March 20th, 2017. I am Joe Murata. Alongside me, my faithful companion, Michael Quinn. How are we doing, Quinn?
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. Yeah, it is spring.
It is springtime.
I'd like to say thank you to Melissa Santos for our new intro.
I couldn't believe it. He just sprung this on me like minutes ago.
I did. I was like, hey, Quinn, check out our new little intro that we got here.
I didn't think it was real at first.
It is.
I couldn't believe it.
It's so real.
So Melissa Santos.
Melissa Santos, the best ring announcer in the business. Where can we find her, Quinn?
She's the ring announcer for a little program called Lucha Underground.
Great show. Fun show.
Yeah, and it's going to be on Netflix soon.
Yeah, very soon.
If you'd like to watch it just right now, you could buy it on iTunes too, if you'd like.
And we're not. This is not a paid advertisement, folks.
No, not a paid advertisement at all.
Promise.
It's just a acknowledgement.
Acknowledgement and a thank you to Melissa Santos.
Big, big thank you.
Yep.
You really surprised me there, Melissa and Joe.
Well, and that's what I'm here to do.
Yeah.
Folks, what we are here to do is talk to you about the world of retro wrestling as we creep forward to WrestleMania Sunshine.
Spring forward.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Is it called WrestleMania Sunshine?
No, but that's like the logo.
It was there's star no number last at year. The end of it.
Now we're just going to call it whatever the logo is. It was star last year. Now it's Sunshine.
I don't like that.
Super Mario Sunshine and WrestleMania Sunshine.
Yeah, double the sunshine.
Folks, of course you can tweet at us at OVP Podcast. You can also email us at ovppodcast@gmail.com. That is ovppodcast@gmail.com. And Quinn, we have a plethora of options. Where can they find us?
Well, they can find us on iTunes first and foremost, and we would appreciate if you'd like to leave a review.
That would be nice.
Leaving a review on iTunes helps us grow and helps your friends know that we exist.
It's true.
Also,
we exist.
Also, we also exist on Google Play Music.
Yes, we do.
FM.player.
Who cares?
Blueberry.
Yes.
Stitcher.
Tune in, I think, allegedly.
We're everywhere.
The video version?
The video version you can get on the YouTube, although not of this podcast. Maybe you will. I don't know.
Who knows?
Who knows? But there's a lot of video stuff up there. We have a live stream. The Hall of Fame bites are now video form.
We got those coming along just weekly, just churning them out.
Yeah, so you can just go watch us if you choose, or you can listen to the audio version.
Yeah.
You got options on this podcast.
Got tons of options. Of course, lest I fail to mention, a couple of weeks from now, the one and only Scott Keith will be with us talking about WrestleMania.
Very exciting.
That'll
very
be real exciting.
Scott is coming back.
Scott is coming back. I'm very thankful for that. I'm also thankful that we're on the Place to Be Nation, Michael.
Oh, yes. We're always in that place.
We are in that place. If you're not listening to us at placetobenation.com, head on over to that place, Quinn. Yeah. They got some cool stuff.
They have great stuff over there. You know, I was just saying to you that I really like the Place to Be podcast. The mother sip, as they call
it. The gold standard.
It is fantastic, and they're covering the old WWF house shows.
They're in 85. They are doing retro wrestling. What's cool about it is we're not doing the same thing.
Right. We definitely are not.
And those guys do a great job.
We go in no order around here.
We go in no order. But JT Rosero and Scott Criscolo do an awesome job on that main podcast there. And we're on there.
Yeah. And we're with them.
We're on that place.
That illustrious crew.
I like that.
Yeah.
Do you like that? I hope we're there for season four still. I hope they renew our lease.
I hope they pick up our contract.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right.
Also,
go ahead, Quinn.
If we failed to mention that we are on a website.
Oh, yeah. What is it called?
OVPpodcast.com.
.com.
You can get everything there. Our links, everything, videos.
Yeah, links.
Everything. And actually, I just wanted to mention also,
go ahead.
There's now a Discord chat room.
Yes, there is.
If fans would like to chat we're open to chatting.
Mm-hmm.
We know you like to communicate on Twitter, but we're just opening lines. It's more of like an instant message kind of thing.
Sure.
It's like the old IRC, because we're real retro around here. So if you want to just pop in there, you don't have to stay. You can leave a message in there.
Sure.
We see everything that's in there. So yeah, that's another option to communicate.
Absolutely. And Quinn, are we on MySpace yet?
No.
Anyway, we are in season 3, folks, as we've mentioned the last couple episodes now. So we do have a different format than maybe you were used to.
Yep.
We start the show now with what do you think of? And I'll be the one starting it this time around.
Mm.
So Quinn, this is a person,
okay,
that you and I don't actually talk too much about on or off the show.
Okay.
But I just let's make it official. Let's get some canon here. We do talk, we've talked about him, but not too
much.
We
don't talk about wrestling off this show, right?
Never.
Never.
Let's get some canon here.
Okay.
What do you think of the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase?
Ooh, I love the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase.
Tell me why.
The Million Dollar Man, I just love the character in general.
Okay.
I like the idea of this guy that, like, has more money than everybody, and mm-hmm. he can kind of do what he wants because of that. Like, he's
right.
independent, like,
sure,
in a way, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Most wrestlers, it's like, they need to win titles so that they could gain money, but this guy just wants to win it to be an asshole, like, basically.
That's true.
Like, that's, like, his gimmick, right?
It is. He's a rich asshole.
Right, and he's got a bodyguard named Virgil, who's kind of making fun of Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah, the name, yep,
yeah,
sure.
And it's just fantastic, and he had many iterations, like
yep.
different versions of him.
Yep.
If you want to hit that.
We won't talk too much about the pre-Million Dollar Man version.
But there is one notable thing to say about
yeah,
that.
I think
he's the first North American champion or whatever that was.
He won the North American heavyweight championship.
Which is basically the reason I'm saying that is because it's the genesis, if you will, of the Intercontinental Championship.
The Phil Collins genesis or the...
No.
Peter Gabriel.
The beginning Genesis.
Sega Genesis.
It's like Sega Genesis, kind of. Sega beginning. Like, what?
Sega!
That was not even in their first system.
It wasn't even the first system. Yeah. Anyway, so he was a big name in Mid-South, which went on to become the UWF in the mid-80s. Big deal down there. He was
Very big deal. I know he was notable for having a tuxedo match with Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
It got big pops and raves and reviews.
Raves and reviews. Either way.
One or the other.
Vince brought him in the summer of 87, and the story I've always heard, Quinn, is that Vince always said if he was a wrestler, that would be the gimmick he would have used.
Makes sense, knowing
totally
more than we know
sense.
About him now.
Right?
I mean, there was no need for the Million Dollar Man in the late 90s when he had Mr. McMahon.
Pretty much. So DiBiase storms on the scene in the summer of 87, and immediately it's established, this is like you said, Quinn, this guy's rich. He doesn't have to do anything. He's independent in a sense. You know, he's independently
right.
wealthy. It's never really explained where he got his money from.
He just has money. That's
it. He just has money and he throws it around. There was a series of vignettes that they would air of all these things. There was one I remember where he paid the pool guy to kick everyone out of the pool.
I think there's a little too much chlorine in the water, don't you? I'll be right back. Get these brats out of the water.
Yeah.
Remember that one?
There's that. There's a bunch of vignettes, and also there was also just him doing interview segments, too. I remember most notably the one with the basketball, that little kid's...
Yes.
And he kicks it.
After it was if he could bounce it 15 times, we would give him money.
Yeah.
And DiBiase kicked it away after the 14th.
Right.
Time.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. That's not the first time I've seen him do that. He did
it's
it
funny.
Later also, but
I'm sure he did. That's funny.
That's the notable one. But there's also the one where Rob Van Dam as a kid kissed his feet or something.
Yes, like, that's true.
Yeah. Remember that?
Yeah. So basically, folks, the whole gist with him is he had a lot of money. He was a Million Dollar Man. And he came in, and pretty soon he was after Hulk Hogan, and of course, infamously or famously, perhaps, he said he was going to
buy the World Wrestling Federation Championship.
I'm going to buy the World Wrestling Federation Heavyweight Championship
from Hogan. Hogan
yes.
said, "Hell no!
Yeah.
Hell no!
Hell no.
That was the best part of that whole main event, you know, Hogan-Andre angle, is that DiBiase was the ringleader here.
He was the straw that stirs the drink, if you will.
He was the Reggie Jackson of this angle, apparently.
Yes, exactly.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Because what he did is he bought Andre's contract from Bobby Heenan for $1 million.
Of course, because he's the $1 million man. But there's also a nice little touch with that later on down the line.
Yes, there is.
When Andre left, Bobby
bought it back for $100,000.
$100,000. So Bobby made $900,000 off of
it. He's the brain.
Yeah.
So obviously DiBiase pays off Andre to win the world title from Hulk Hogan at the main event, and then Andre gives it to him.
Yeah. Mr. DiBiase. Yeah. I told you
I was going to win the
tag team championship. The whole deal.
This is special for us. I tell you, I'm going to win the World Tag Team Championship.
It's one of the most ridiculous things ever.
It is.
Like, the whole thing is a scene.
Hogan with the promo. How much money for the plastic surgery?
You see the $100 bills falling out of the ref's pocket. Never happened.
Never happened.
He just sang it.
Identical. Yeah. You know, all
identical.
That. This will all be cut in.
Yeah, this has to be cut in.
Yes.
How much money did they spend on the plastic surgery, man? They were identical. Identical.
Hey, right here, Hulk.
Look at the $100 bill falling out of his pocket.
I know you're
not- So, his main event push was really the year of, like, 80. He was a finalist in the tournament against Randy Savage at WrestleMania 4.
Yes, he was.
We discussed 4, obviously, last week, so we don't need to rehash. 2 weeks ago.
He essentially made it to the finals and lost.
Yeah, he made it to the finals and
lost.
With
a lot of cheating.
Yes, and he continued to feud with Savage throughout 88, so he was still like one of their main heels.
Yeah, they kept him up there for a while, but I think where he really proved his power here was afterwards, when he was treated like a main eventer that didn't need to be in the main event. I don't know how else to describe it.
No, that's well said. He was always well protected and well regarded.
Right. He never really lost.
Not often.
Not often.
Honestly,
no.
Think of it. He didn't lose that much in that run.
Right. It was just like, basically, the way they approached it was, well, we can't have this big heel winning the world title. However, he is a millionaire, and he can do whatever he wants, so what if he just makes his own world title, and that's exactly what he did.
How awesome was that whole angle? What do you think of that?
It's awesome. The $1 million belt is cool.
Like, it is.
It looks cool even now. And it's the most narcissistic thing of all time. It's dollar symbols made of diamonds and gold. It's ridiculous.
And DiBiase, the best part of it is, despite the fact that Jack Tunney would be like, it's not a real title.
Yeah, and he just didn't give a shit.
He didn't care.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that Gorilla was always like, that's not a real title, Jess.
Yeah.
He didn't care.
No,
he's like,
no,
this title matters, fuckers. Like,
right, yeah.
This is
mine. He would do that. Yeah. And also, he would defend it, but it was under his own rules, because it was his belt.
He was the governing body.
And I would love that, because Gorilla would try to argue it, but at the end of the day, they would, you know, Jesse would counterpoint and just say, well, he bought it, it's his, like, he can control how it's defended, it's not really anybody else's business.
Right.
Like,
especially if Tony is going to say it's not a real title.
Right, so screw it.
Screw it.
Yeah,
exactly. So his 89 was a bit of a dip from his 88.
Well, I mean, he was at the top, so there's no other.
Okay,
to me,
fair,
89,
fair.
He's establishing that he's like another thing. Like,
yeah,
he's not
upper mid-card heel.
Yeah.
Legitimate threat.
He doesn't need the world title, because he has his own.
Doesn't need the world title. Feuds with a couple of people. I don't know, Beefcake, Jake Roberts, that feud starts, of course,
in
89.
Yeah, Jake's probably pretty notable.
Yeah.
And Hercules, he's his slave thing.
Yes.
Like, which I don't even understand how that works legally. And like even the money way it worked was stupid. Like, somehow Bobby the Brain Heenan can sell a contract that Hercules is a slave.
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
Really, it's Vince for you.
Yeah.
Now, in 90, of course, he has his big blow up with Jake at WrestleMania 6.
Yeah.
Then he transitions into that weird ass feud where he buys Sapphire to screw with Dusty Rhodes.
Okay. I find this very strange. I get it that he's like he doesn't care about Sapphire.
No, not
he's
at
only
all.
Doing it to, but it went on for so long. Like, if you watch those superstars from 90s,
yeah,
from 90s, 90, he's like, there's like a million promos with Sapphire just standing next to him, like with the back. Like, they look like they were all filmed at SummerSlam.
They probably were.
Like, and it's like weeks and weeks of them. Like, it's and they're all different. Like, and it's just Sapphire standing in a corner and him just saying stuff. stuff.
Yeah, like you always did.
Yeah.
And then, of course, in 90, 91, we've covered the DiBiase-Virgil angle. Great angle.
Probably the best angle of DiBiase, if you ask me.
Yeah, like, I mean, that and the main event angle with Hogan Andre, but he was kind of a byproduct of that.
And by that point, he had gotten the Sensational Sherry, so that was a big change for the Million Dollar Man.
You got Sherry in 91.
And
yep.
I know a lot of people find that a weak combination. I love it. Like I
like it.
And I think we've been over this.
We have.
Yeah. I think that's one of the better versions of DiBiase, because that is really, he's very independent at that point. He does not need to be involved with Hogan or anything.
True.
Like, he is this other part of the roster that is awesome. Like, people are gunning after him like he's a real champion.
No, that's
you know what
true.
I mean? Like,
that's
Piper
true.
Wants his belt, and Virgil wants his belt.
That's true.
Yeah.
What do you think of Money, Inc.? That was his next thing after the Sherry Association.
I don't like it as much as his prior career. However, it's a solid tag team. I just feel a lot of it is like, it just feels like DiBiase's tapering off at that point. Like,
apparently, I guess he had some nagging injuries.
Yeah, I think some with his back or something.
Or neck,
Scott had mentioned it in one
Scott
of our podcasts.
Keith, you know, I think you're right.
But, you know, he made it work.
He made it work. They gave them a run with the tag titles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had a pretty solid run there.
Right.
Only finally losing them once and for all to the Steiners in, like, the summer of 93 or whenever that was.
Yeah, and that was,
you know,
kind of the end of DiBiase wrestling.
His last pay-per-view match was, or WWF match, actually, was against Razor Ramon, and he put him over like a champ. Clean at SummerSlam 93.
As should he, and, you know, he was an old school guy. I know that.
Yes, he was.
And he did the job, and I even like his work afterwards. Not that it's very notable or anything, but him as a manager, it works. It's just, you
know. I was going to ask you, the corporation.
It's not great. Let me put it this way.
Shouldn't it have been better if DiBiase is going to manage a stable?
Here's the problem with the corporation.
The
it's
people
not,
in
and
it.
It's, and it's not DiBiase.
Yeah.
The leader is great.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, a lot of it feels like, man, I just wish DiBiase could take care of this business himself, because he would do it better.
Right.
Like, that's how I feel, like, because it's almost like all these guys are just failing to, like, do what he would do.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's what it feels like. It feels like a bunch of goofs that are trying to live up to DiBiase, and they can't. And DiBiase, all he can do is kind of sit idly by and, like, hope they do his bidding. Like,
that stable was a living disappointment, you know? And the best guy he had in it for a while was IRS.
I would arguably say Kama was the only one who ever went anywhere.
Sid was in it for a bit. But
Sid, too,
that was the crappy version of Sid.
Right, wasn't the good version. I guess that's the height of it, right? He feuds with Diesel for
the
title.
Yeah, that's probably the best version of
DiBiase had the crappy coat the whole time, too. The, like, windbreaker.
Can we talk about his attire real quick?
Yeah.
He came into the WWF and he had the silver suit.
Right, which is okay. I like the silver.
Then he had the green.
Now, a lot of people like the green. I do not prefer
the green.
I think that's the cheesiest.
Cheap, yeah.
It's the cheesiest version of Ted DiBiase.
I agree. I like the shiny black.
The black is the one.
That's awesome.
That's the DiBiase suit that you expect.
Yes, but you're right. As a manager, he had, like, the windbreaker $1 million jacket or whatever.
It was really weird. I don't know what that was. And then, I guess, I mean, from the corporation just goes, he goes to the NWO, right?
Well, he did bring in Steve Austin as the ring master. That was his last acquisition.
Yes, and that was definitely a big deal that he brought in. I mean, it's hooked to DiBiase. It's not like he made the decision or anything, but
right.
I mean, if you want to see where Austin really came from as far as his WWF character, it comes from being under DiBiase and then him being upset
disgruntled with him.
Yeah.
Yep, that's
and
exactly
that's kinda
what it was.
Almost, again, the genesis of Stone Cold Steve Austin.
It is. Yeah. And then DiBiase, like you said, Quinn, goes to the NWO. He was the fourth man, I actually want to say. I think he was.
Something like that, or the fifth man.
Fourth or fifth.
Yeah.
But that was always confusing, because you could never tell. Was he supposed to be the manager?
No.
He was the financial backer.
So there was this question, and it was actually well done how they did it. There was this question of how are these guys, like, doing this? Like, because remember they had, like, television, and they would say paid for by the NWO?
Yes.
And there was no answer to that for a while.
Right.
And that, well, it wasn't a while, because DiBiase came in pretty quick. But the point is basically it was revealed that DiBiase was financing this whole venture.
That's
how they were getting away with all the stuff they were doing.
And coincidentally, his name is Ted. They called him Trillionaire Ted.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was pretty smart, actually.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
But his WCW run sucked.
Yeah, and then he went to the Steiners.
That was horrible.
And this is the DiBiase of crap, I remember. And then the only other stuff is, you know, I think he briefly managed his son for a second, and gave him the $1 million
belt. That came back, yeah. But overall, man, looking back on DiBiase's career, I didn't appreciate him as a kid because I got into the, like, I guess I did appreciate him because I didn't like him. because he was heel.
Yeah, you should have hated him. He was a dick.
He was a huge dick. I didn't like him. And you know what? Great on the mic.
Fantastic. Always
awesome
one
talker.
Of the best talkers. I think that's what got him through his injuries a lot.
Yep. Great talk of that laugh.
You could not have him wrestle for weeks.
Right.
And just cut promos because he was just so good.
He was. And that laugh, man.
Yeah, the laugh. The
iconic. My God. What a laugh.
It's in his song. I mean, not a lot of guys had them talking in their song.
That's
other
right.
Than Ted DiBiase.
Yeah, like a sound bite at the beginning of the song.
And he sings his song.
And he sings a song.
Yeah.
Or talks his song or
whatever. Whatever he does. Yeah.
Great song, too. Great theme music.
Iconic. Again, a lot of iconic things with Ted DiBiase.
Yep.
Like the suit, the $1 million belt, the song, the laugh.
And his ring style, rough. Like, rough but technical.
Very technical. I used to like the way he would do that falling punch thing.
Yeah, the fist drop.
Yeah, it's just good stuff.
It was good, and he was just like fun to watch.
And he was considered smart. They treated
smart
him like he was
wrestler.
Smart.
Yep.
Yeah,
he wasn't a doofus.
But I mean, even like his plans, his diabolical plans were actually pretty smart. Like, if I was watching back then, I would have never figured somebody would try to buy the world title. Like, that's different.
That's true.
Like,
good point.
As a character, you know?
Very good point.
That's interesting.
So overall, Quinn, DiBiase?
Thumbs up.
Big thumbs up. Yeah. I have to agree.
Yeah.
I think he's a great, great, great performer. Memorable.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's in the Hall of Fame and deservedly so.
Oh, yeah.
Great. Iconic character from the 80s and 90s.
Definitely.
So, folks, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back right after this.
I'm Ted DiBiase. I'm the $1 million man. And you know, as I travel around this fair country of ours, I run into a lot of people who aren't happy with the way I spend my money. They say that money is the root of all evil. Well, I'm here to tell you that it's not. Because you see, with enough of this right here, I can buy anything. I can have anything I want. I can buy happiness. I can buy love. And if I want to, I can even buy you.
Ow! Virgil, I've cut my finger. I need medical attention. Get me to a doctor right now.
Nurse, I need immediate medical attention. I've hurt my finger and I need to see a doctor now.
Sir, I'm sorry. You've got to have an appointment.
Oh, wait, you don't understand. I'm Ted DiBiase. I'm the $1 million man. I don't need an appointment.
Sir, I've got sick people here waiting to see the doctor. You've got to make an appointment.
Virgil, can I get a Band-Aid for this finger now?
Let me see what I can do, sir.
Yeah. Hey, don't be upset with her. She did the same thing that anybody else in her position would have done. She did the same thing that you would have done. She had her price, just like each and every one of you have your price. Everybody's got a price. For the $1 million man.
And welcome back, wrestling fans, to Our Vantage Point, the retro wrestling podcast, here on episode number 23, first day of spring, March 20th, 2017, Quinn.
Here we are.
Here we are. That was a nice little talky talk we had about Ted DiBiase there.
Talky talk about Teddy Ted. Teddy 2.
Teddy Bear.
Teddy Bear, as Sherry called him, yeah.
That's right.
Yep.
So, folks, if you've been following along with Season 3, we have a new segment called Mount Rushmore and Death Valley, where each week we will send four things, whatever they might be. The four best things will go on to Mount Rushmore, and the four worst go down into the desert of Death Valley.
The desert of Death Valley.
With The Undertaker.
Die, die, die.
Die, die, die.
Yeah.
So, it was my pick last week, so Michael Quinn... You're going to be doing the Rushmore in Death Valley this week, so what do you got?
Okay, so this week I think I have one that, although it will start out as a love fest, I think it will really degenerate when we get to the worst of the worst.
Oh no.
And it is... Managers.
Managers!
Yes.
Very interesting, very interesting. So what's your criteria?
I mean, all the things that make up a good manager, like good talking.
Which we've discussed,
good character.
Yep.
A good representative of his man.
Okay.
You know, that kind of thing.
Just overall good personality.
Good personality. Yeah. What you would entail being a good manager.
Okay.
And I think definitely what pops first in my mind.
I'm sure it pops.
And actually, I may let you go first because I think that's the way we should do this out of courtesy.
Okay. Thank you, Curtis.
Yeah.
No question about it.
Yeah.
Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Yes, and I was going to go there, too.
He has to be on there. I mean, should we just put him on there first and then talk about him?
He's just on.
All right.
Like, so there's not even, like, questions about that.
He's
like,
definitely on.
He's the greatest manager of all time. It's like not putting, like, Babe Ruth in the Mount Rushmore of baseball players or something.
All right, so, folks, Bobby Heenan is on. Yeah, he's got to be.
He's got to be.
How do you not put him on there?
I don't get how you wouldn't. I mean,
he was maybe the best talker ever.
Yes.
Like, literally maybe ever.
Of course, he went to the University of Wisconsin, right?
In Madison.
Don't take a whole lot to get in there. I guess you have to be able to, the entrance exam, you have to be able to write your name in three different colors of crayon.
He is something, all right. What I like about Bobby being on there, he just oozes charisma.
Like, he does.
There's just little things he does.
Ugh.
Like, okay, for example, say he, like, is, like, standing around or running around or something. He just always does, like, the little thing where he'll pretend to trip or, like,
yes.
Even when it, like, doesn't matter and it shouldn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, it's, like, just, it's almost like an instinct for him, right? Like,
yes.
I don't know how he does this, but he just does it.
Yeah, absolutely. He is one of the quickest witted, most comedic instincts, you know, I've ever seen.
Right.
Brilliant mind. Just brilliant. Can turn around something and make it funny.
I know a lot of these guys have nicknames, but the Brain really, like, sticks when you see his body of work. Like, I know it's supposed to be, like, stupid because he's not smart, but,
yeah,
like, he really
in
is.
Real
yeah,
life,
he really is really smart.
Brilliant, like, comedic mind.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Jeez, you can't even compare.
You know, he could be serious when he wanted
That's
to,
the
too.
Thing about him.
Yeah.
He was a dastardly manager.
Right.
That people didn't like because
no.
He was so good at being unlikable.
And the weasel thing just stuck.
Oh, yeah.
And he would play that up, too. I mean, like, even in the weasel suit thing.
Right.
He would chase his tail.
Be falling over,
you
yep.
know, be falling over. Always, like, being confused when he's in the weasel suit,
yep.
you know?
Somehow.
Yeah, like, what did they, like, I can never figure out how he was confused when they put him in it. But he somehow convinced me that he was confused.
I think it says a lot about him. I mean, we could dedicate a whole episode to him. So I guess we'll keep it brief on
we'll
him
keep
to
it
be
brief.
Safe.
And we got other names
yeah,
to go here. But, I mean,
I think that one of the crowning things, though, that sums it all up is one of the biggest matches of all time, Quinn, is, of course, Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant.
Right.
At WrestleMania 3.
Yeah.
And who, besides those two, played the biggest part in it?
Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Exactly.
And that should just stand a testament to why he's on Mount Rushmore, period.
Yeah.
And that's just it.
He is one of the best managers.
Without dedicating an entire segment
yeah.
to Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Believe me, folks, we could go on a lot longer, but for
yeah.
the sake of time here,
right.
I say you throw one at me, Quinn.
Well, if we started with a guy, I would throw a girl on there.
Okay.
And you know who I'm going to throw. Sherry.
Yeah.
I as far as female managers go, I can't think of anyone that would top her.
Like, I mean, you know how I feel about Sherry. I think our audience knows how we both feel about Sherry. One
right.
of the best of all time.
Right.
I think just for the sake of further discussion, I say we hold her off for the time being.
I agree. But I think she's
strongly considered.
Strong contender right
Absolutely.
Now.
Sherry's incredible.
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan, you sorry excuse for a human. You sorry excuse for a man. How could you ever possibly think that you could hide behind that little pink skirt of Miss Elizabeth?
You know, for what it's worth, do you think Jimmy Hart merits any consideration?
Ooh. Here's the thing. If we're tabling Sherry, right?
Yeah.
I don't think Jimmy Hart's as good as her.
You don't think so?
However, there's two spots open.
True.
But I think that I would like to raise your Jimmy Hart.
Okay.
With a Captain Lou.
Captain Lou.
Yeah.
Hey, paisanos, it's the Super Mario Brothers Super Show.
Now, we're talking the heel Captain Lou.
Yeah, not that stupid face version. That's
okay.
dumb.
Not the
and
rock
that was
and
only
wrestling
done
version.
Because he was like at the tail end of
yeah.
his career.
We're talking,
like that,
yeah.
we're talking like crazy Captain Lou.
The money drawing, heat drawing.
Yeah.
You know, people want to punch this guy. Obnoxious
yeah.
ass.
Right.
70s, early 80s Lou Albano.
Oh yeah.
The one that screwed over Jimmy Snuka.
Yeah.
The one that was just an asshole anytime he was on the screen.
Right.
I fluently learned to read and write and speak Japanese. Would you like to hear a few words?
Yes.
Hayataya un sakahito. Ina mitakayoa sata rikmate ayagaria eta pedro maya ungu monkey. Yata sata. Uya kutubaya.
The obnoxious. One
just, and he just did it for so long.
Yeah.
Like, I know we can only put so many managers up here.
Yeah.
And I think that we need to just first discuss the Grand Wizard and Blassie, because they're his, like, contemporaries. Like,
true.
Because this spot, true, you know, with Bobby eating a spot up initially.
Yes.
Like, that kind of, now we're, like, really, like, we can really only pick one, if you think about it, of that era.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Grand Wizard belongs on that.
I don't either.
Blassie, as notable as Blassie is he a Captain Lou? Compare him to Lou.
I don't think he is.
I don't think he is either. I think Lou is better than the two of them.
But I mean, there's also Ayatollah Blassie.
yeah, but come on.
The other version. I don't know. I feel Captain Lou is like,
I think
he's a shoo-in.
Yeah, I think he's gotta be on. You don't see
an area where Captain Lou would get kicked off?
Right. I think if you will agree with me, Quinn, I think we should put him on.
Okay, so
what do you think? We'll put him on?
We will put him on.
All right. Captain Lou is on.
Captain Lewis.
All right, so we have two left now.
Right.
Well, we've covered Sherry. I get to throw one at you?
Sure.
All right. Jim Cornette.
Mm. Okay. This is interesting you talk about this, because I actually think Jim Cornette is a very overrated manager.
Why?
Because unlike a lot of the names we're talking about,
mm-hmm,
he really only had one that was like really a thing.
His bread and butter.
His bread and butter.
The Midnights.
And we had mentioned them in other things.
In our last Hall of Fame bite.
Right. And like, I know Jim Cornette was with Yokozuna and stuff, but he was just like an adjunct onto that. Like, he wasn't like, he was just the spokesman.
Yeah,
like,
that didn't
and then
matter.
Like, all his other WF Vader. Managing Vader.
That
like,
sucked. Yeah, Cam Cornette was a shitty stable.
A mini Vader.
It's stop.
Yeah.
Cam Cornette is also a horrible name for a stable.
It's
Camp
terrible.
Cornette?
Yeah.
It's what is really, it, Camp Nowhere?
Because they needed two C's, so it couldn't be like Troop Cornette.
Chubby Cornette.
Yeah. He's not Mount Rushmore material. Like,
great talker, though.
Great talker. And that's not to say he isn't a great talker. And he had his moments.
Yeah.
I just don't think if you were like to like have like this Rushmore of managers, I don't think people would be like, yeah, Jim Cornette. Like, as a manager, they would think of him more as that guy on the internet that complains about stuff. Like, you know what I mean?
Yes.
I mean, you know I'm right.
Yeah, you are right.
Yeah.
It's not the same as John Cena hosting the fucking Today Show when you're on a clip in the fucking Cheetah segment of the Tarzan movie. You dipshits, if that's the best you can aspire to.
Okay, then throw one at me.
I guess I'll just throw him out because we didn't mention him in the classic managers, but just for consideration, what do you think of Fuji? I don't know if he's Mount Rushmore,
he's
but I'd rather
good.
Discuss him for
he's,
a second.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah.
He is not great.
No.
He's below Jimmy Hart for sure.
He is below
definitely.
Jimmy Hart.
Below probably even like a Fred Blassie, honestly.
Yeah.
You think Fuji really, like...
Well, Fuji had his moments with Don Morocco, and
did.
Also he managed Demolition.
Okay, you know what? I actually forgot about that.
Yeah,
believe
he managed
it or not,
Demolition.
He did, you're right.
You know,
Yoko.
The good and bad Orient Express.
Yokozuna.
Yokozuna.
That's a good point.
He's had a lot of accomplishments as a manager.
Okay.
I would say.
He's still no Jimmy Hart.
He still isn't, but there is something to say about Fuji's, like, unspoken way of handling things.
The devious one.
Right. And how he would portray that was kind of awesome, actually.
If we're talking Rushmore, though, he's I don't think
maybe,
he belongs there.
Yeah. I mean, you could table him. Would you table
he's
Fuji?
Under the table. No. If Jimmy Hart and Sherry are sitting at the table, Fuji's like getting a seat.
Why
he's
we
waiting
put,
to be seated.
Why don't we put Jimmy and Fuji in the waiting to be seated section?
I'll be 5-10 minutes.
Whereas Sherry has a table, but she's not like
she hasn't
at the
ordered
right,
yet.
Yeah, she hasn't ordered yet.
Okay, fine. Then I'm going to give you someone else that just walked into the restaurant.
Yeah.
Paul Heyman.
Hey, what stinks in here?
Ooh, that's a good one.
As Paul E. Dangerously and
the full work.
Paul
the
Heyman,
full body
yeah.
of work. Yeah, that is definitely one to be considered.
Now, I want to ask you a question, though.
What?
Do you think that his Paul Heyman 2013 to now work, you know, as that version of Paul Heyman, do you think that only is getting noticed because he's literally the only manager like that right now?
I will say this.
Would he stand out in the 80s era of the managers?
Listen, I will say this about Paul Heyman. What he's doing right now regardless of the fact that he's the only one doing it,
yeah,
it's still good work. Like
it's very good work.
It would fit. It would be considered like up their work if it, the same work was being done in 1991 or whatever.
Okay,
like, you know what I mean?
Okay.
I think that his previous work is excellent. Especially just in ECW, in WCW.
Yep.
Like Dangerous Alliance.
Yep.
All the stuff with there with Rude and,
yeah,
you know,
with
Nabisco and Arn Anderson
Nabisco.
And Steve Austin.
Yep, Stunning Steve.
But then in ECW, like, I love him in ECW because he manages Sabu. But, like, there's also this stuff where he's, like, working with, like, the Public Enemy and then they screw him over.
Yeah.
And then he kind of becomes face for a second.
A little.
He's not really face.
No.
Like, he's just like, no, these guys, like, screwed me over. So there's a lot of complexities to Paul Heyman. And you know what? Like, I would kind of, I'm leaning towards Rushmore, actually.
You know what,
like,
Quinn? I'm going to agree with you.
I
didn't either, but I think I'm going to agree with you. Can we agree that he's on?
I think so.
Yeah? You think he's on?
Yeah, I think he's on.
I think let's put him on then. Let's just go for it.
Dean Martellus is the next heavyweight champion. With this hard punch, there's nobody, not Luger, not Sting, not the Steiners, not anybody in Indianapolis that can stop Dean Martellus.
Paul E.
Dangerously.
So
Heyman.
We've got three. Dangerously is his real middle name, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
I'm just kidding.
He's got two.
We've got three on there already, Quinn. We've got Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Right.
Captain Lou, or Captain Lewis,
yeah,
as Vince always called him.
Yeah.
Captain Lewis Albano and
Paul Heyman.
I think that's a great
Three people.
Is it coming down to Jimmy Hart and Sherry now?
Or Fooge?
All right,
I'm trying to think of any other managers,
right?
We haven't, like,
we've named
Clarence.
Almost,
no, I'm just.
No. We've named almost all WWF guys. Are we missing anyone from WCW notable?
Teddy Long.
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
Not much in WCW. Like, I mean, there is, like, in the heyday, like, what is
Paul
that?
Jones.
Paul Jones. That's who
Gary
I was thinking.
Hart.
Gary Hart. Yeah, there's guys. J.J. Dillon.
He's so boring.
Yeah,
that's
I agree.
My version of him.
I agree.
He's boring.
If we're going to mention
stinks.
Sherry Baby Doll, like, no.
Yeah, what did she do, though? You know what I mean?
She's just like, I did bad things, and now I'm with Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah, like, and she likes the people that win the titles.
Yeah, she's just like a gold digger character.
Bullshit.
What about Terry Runnels, who was also like the...
Alexandria York. Do we put Sonny into this discussion? No,
when
right?
you got Sherry in the discussion, it's hard.
Never mind, you can't. No.
I mean, Miss Elizabeth?
No.
Not really.
No way.
Well, one thing to say about Miss Elizabeth is, like, I understand that she's not really a talker or anything, and that's kind of the whole point of being a manager.
Thankfully.
However, she is kind of, like, iconic.
She is, Quinn, but we're talking, like, managers
right,
here that
yeah.
did manager things.
I mean, does anybody think of Miss Elizabeth other than a manager?
She's like a valet.
Yeah, she is more valet.
She didn't really do anything.
Would you consider woman more?
She's okay.
She's pretty good, actually, but would you consider her, like, a manager or a valet?
She is, like...
Because she's really involved, like...
I don't know.
I don't know if you've seen her ECW work as much. She's ridiculous.
I have with
she's
Sam like, Mann and all that. Yeah,
she's probably the closest approximation to Sherry. Like,
yeah, but it's like if Sherry is Coke, woman is RC Cola.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah.
I mean. She not even Pepsi.
Yeah, Miss Elizabeth's Pepsi, and
maybe.
She doesn't even do as much.
Yeah. So no,
right.
Woman's not even in that discussion. I think we've really got to narrow it down to these three that we were just mentioning, Jimmy Hart, Sherry, and Fuji.
Yeah.
I think the first battle, the first elimination round here is between Jimmy Hart and Fuji.
I think Fuji's out then. not to say that he's like crappy or anything.
No, he's fine.
He's perfectly okay.
Jimmy Hart, damn good manager.
Yeah.
Look at these. I'm going to have to crawl in the ring and wear these stupid, silly looking tights. I am a manager. I am not a professional wrestler. You know, Junkyard Dog, you're responsible. Give me these. You're responsible for this.
Real? I mean, he actually might even be the same stupid.
You know, okay, we forgot one.
He might be underrated is what I was going to say. What did we forget?
The Slickster.
He's
again,
not.
Yeah, he doesn't meet the Jimmy
no.
Hart standard, and he doesn't even meet Sherry.
The three people we've mentioned so far have managed world champions.
Yeah.
The three people. Well, did Albano, even if he didn't, he managed like a million tag champions, but he might have managed a world champion. The people we've mentioned so far were amongst the best talkers of their era.
Right.
I mean, really, Bobby Heenan in the 80s, Abano in the 70s, Heyman in the 90s, and now.
Right.
You know, best talkers of their era.
Yeah.
Managed notable wrestlers.
The rest of the flock here are all like, they're more just... They're characters.
They're memorable characters.
Right.
So that's where we...
Well, then if you were to say that, then the Slickster could definitely, like, make it into the running again. But
if we're going to put Jimmy Hart's career against, you know,
and
Sherry...
Sherry...
It's tough because Jimmy Hart did manage, you know, the Hart Foundation.
Right. But Sensational Sherry managed the Macho Man.
I know.
And she managed Ted DiBiase.
And Shawn Michaels.
And Shawn Michaels.
And that's just her WWF run. She managed Ric Flair.
Harlem Heat.
Harlem Heat.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
And then in ECW, Shane Douglas, I believe.
She managed the champion, Shane Douglas. Like,
Jimmy Hart managed the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion of all time.
So?
He managed Hulk Hogan.
Oh, come on. Are you really going to... No.
I don't like that combination whatsoever.
That combination is utter garbage. Like, stop. I don't even count that as, like, managing. It was more like, I'm a big stooge for Hulk Hogan. Like,
yeah, baby, we're going to... red and yellow Hulk.
That was just something for him to do while he wrote good wrestling themes.
He did do that.
Yeah.
Can you believe this? Jimmy Hart, manager of the Mega Maniacs, baby, wearing the red and the yellow...
If it's a,
I honestly, like, I'm leaning Sherry.
I'm leaning Sherry.
She's good.
She, good is an understatement.
Yeah.
She is great.
Yeah. Here's the thing. With Jimmy Hart, the more I watch him, he doesn't really, like, elevate anything in my mind, but the more I watch Sherry over the years, the more I appreciate her. And, like, you can't say that about many managers. Like, the fact that she was that subtle... That, like, there was things you didn't notice when you were watching, and then you go back, and then you keep seeing her over time, and you're like, man, she was really friggin' good. Like,
yeah, you know what? Okay, here's one. Here's a good criteria.
Yeah.
And I think you'll see where I'm getting with this.
Okay.
Did putting anyone with Jimmy Hart ever elevate them?
No.
Right.
I don't think so.
But there is no way Macho Man in 89 is as good as he is without Sherry.
Nope.
There's no way DiBiase's post-Virgil run is as good as it was without Sherry. There
and
is no
course,
way Shawn Michaels' first run as a heel
would have even worked
without
Sherry.
I think it's the choice is clear-cut, Quinn. If you're with me,
she's invaluable.
I agree with you. And she's one of the best of all time, personality-wise, manager-wise, talking. She's wonderful.
Right.
Took the bumps, got involved. She was fantastic.
Are we okay? I don't want to commit for 1 second.
Fine.
Are we missing anybody from like the modern or 90s? Like what about, what's it? Get Fame.
Famous B. Come on.
Famous B.
Is there anyone from the current era in WWE that's even a manager anymore?
Not really.
Not really.
Eh, I guess not.
I don't think we're missing any big
Summer
names.
Rae?
She was good, but it was brief.
Yeah, it wasn't as elongated as Sherry.
And we mentioned him in our manager segment from way back, but Sweet and Sour Larry Sweeney was great.
Okay, if Sweet and Sour Larry Sweeney had not passed away, he would like be in like
he'd probably be there.
By now he would be in, definitely.
He'd be there. Yeah. He was a great personality, but again, that's not Mount Rushmore.
If NXT had existed a couple years earlier, Sweet and Sour would have probably been a thing and
I agree.
He would have probably been with us still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's sad, but all right, Quinn. Sherry is better than Jimmy Hart?
Yeah, I can't. I honestly, like, I thought Sherry was just me liking Sherry, but when you stack her up against, like, other managers, it's really hard to find something on... She's definitely the weakest.
Yeah.
But it's really hard to find somebody in that category that would fit, so I would go with Sherry.
I think I'm going to go with Sherry, too. I said we put her on there. There's no question in my mind anymore. We did it, Quinn.
There we go.
Four. We've got Bobby Heenan, Lou Albano,
right.
Paul E. Dangerously Heyman,
yeah,
and Sensational Sherry.
Yeah, there you
I
have
think that's
it.
A great Mount
that's
Rushmore.
A great list.
That's nothing to be ashamed of.
Nothing to be ashamed of
at
all.
The thing that I'm worried about, though, is Death Valley. It scares me a bit.
Yeah, it's a bit scary because those managers that are bad, they are bad.
You know what? Before we get into Death Valley, Quinn, I just want to remind the folks, let us know your Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, you could let us actually know on the site.
Yeah.
I know I said it a couple times now.
We get some activity from that.
But yeah, if you want to discuss on there, it gives you a chance to interact also with other fans of the show as well as us. So.
Exactly. Trying to bring it all together. You know?
We're really trying to make a community here. So
Justin Hand, you know.
Yeah,
and
you can talk
Jimmy
to
Borden.
Marty. Or yeah. Marty, you could talk to...
Ruben Vasquez.
Or Richard.
Yeah, Richard Land.
Something like that.
Maybe Marcello.
Yeah, so all the fans, you know, like... Those are just some fans. I'm sure we have other fans, too.
That don't say anything,
maybe,
yeah.
Yeah, if you...
Fine.
I mean, if you don't like to comment, I get it.
You don't have to.
You don't have to, but the choice is yours.
The choice is yours.
Yeah.
But Quinn, speaking of choices...
Right.
It's time for Death Valley, and since I picked with Rushmore, I think it's only fair that you throw the first Death Valley at me.
Throw the first shot.
Yeah, fire the first shot here.
Well, you know who I can't stand, who's a frequent topic on
oh,
this show,
God.
But... I would put Paul Ellering in Death Valley without question.
Would you really, though?
He's so bad. He's so overrated, Joe. It's crap, for lack of a better term.
That's right, Tony. I got it all up here. Who's starting? But one thing I do know, we're going to be leaving, and we're going to be leaving winners. Animal and Hawk are at the matches right now. They're ready. Believe me, they're ready.
Folks, if you haven't been following along, you know, the past 20-something years of episodes here, Quinn absolutely cannot stand Paul Ellering.
I cannot. And it's not even because he's, like, his heel or face.
No, I know.
It's because it's all this, like, they treat him. Like, he's so good, and he just is not good. He never says anything of value, ever.
So, is it the way he talks, but he's saying nothing?
Yeah, it's the way he talks, and he's saying nothing. Like, and it just, it grinds my gears. Because, like, you know how, like, we know Bobby's good and stuff?
Yes.
But in this case, we're told he's good, but he just isn't.
With Ellering?
Yeah, and what has he done other than the LOD? Everything he manages is garbage other than that. I mean, I don't remember. There's a reason why I don't even remember who's in the original LOD. Like
the Legion of Doom stable.
Yeah, because I think that was Ellering's job to really make us remember that. And he clearly didn't do it.
Listen.
And his karate gi. And there's so many problems with him.
I knew that would come up.
Yeah.
I think we need to wait for a yardstick here, a measuring stick, a
Fine,
bar.
But I'm putting him up there.
Of your own volition, I know.
I can't stand him.
We'll see if we can, you know, we both have to turn our keys here. We have to agree. It's like the nuclear, you know, launch codes here.
Right.
We have to both be in agreement here.
Okay.
It's like the Colonel's secret recipe. We each have half of it.
Right.
You know,
is that how it works? Colonel?
Probably.
Colonel, call in.
Yeah, Colonel.
Call into our non-existent number.
All right, you know what, though? There's other bad managers.
Bad managers, but Paul Ellering should be there.
Now, obviously, in the case of a bad manager, I'm assuming it would be the opposite of all the criteria for a good one, right?
The opposite, and just, like, just...
Bad at talking.
Just bad at everything.
Not, like, doing anything that matters.
Yeah.
Not helping your wrestler.
Not getting them over. Nothing.
Okay.
Like, not even with heat.
Right, right.
Purely, like... If you have to ask the question, why the hell is this guy here?
Yeah.
That's a bad manager.
Okay, fair enough. Harvey Whippleman was terrible.
Harvey Whippleman was pretty bad.
Anyone that was with him, it, like, degraded them.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I mean, I think it made Sid look stupid.
It made Sid look stupid?
And he was probably the best person he ever managed. Kamala.
Yeah. Adam
Bomb. Would you throw in Kim Chi in bad managers?
He wasn't supposed to be their manager. He was like a handler. He didn't manage them.
He didn't really manage much of anything.
Yeah, that's true. It was Steve Lombardi.
Yeah. Sometimes.
Yeah.
Depending on the territory.
I can't put Kim Chi there. Whippleman sucked.
Whippleman did suck.
He did. I'm talking about not the guy, but the Harvey. Downtown Bruno might have been different.
Yeah.
Harvey Whippleman really sucked.
Yeah, it's the thing. Harvey Whippleman.
Harvey Whippleman. There's a reason he said it like that.
Harvey Whippleman!
When you're feuding with the Fink, you know you suck.
Yeah, he,
like,
was
come
pretty
on.
Terrible.
What is
having,
that,
like,
about?
Tuxedo matches that we don't want to see. Like, yeah.
That's the best description. Tuxedo matches that no one wanted to see.
No, he's like inverted heat. Like, it's
true.
Just like, just no, get out of here.
He sucked.
This guy, what would you think of the coach?
You mean not Jonathan Coachman.
No.
You mean the coach, John Tolos.
Coach John Tolos.
From the Mr. Perfect.
Yeah.
And the Beverly Brothers.
It's memorable because
he's terrible.
Yeah, he's awful.
You know what? That's a good one.
Yeah, coach.
Because he was like...
he wasn't even... Like, what? Like,
what was that?
Why was he there all of a sudden?
What was he coaching?
Yeah. Mr. Perfect needed a coach? He's perfect. Why does he need a coach?
Why was he like an athletic coach?
Yeah, he was in like sweatpants.
He was like Coach Cutlip from the Wonder Years.
He was really garbage.
With the whistle.
Whining. Get a mop.
Just utter crap. Like,
you know what?
I think he should be on there because, like, he's really, really bad.
All right. Hang on. You might be right, actually. Yeah. You might really be right about this one.
Coach Tolos or whatever.
He sucked.
Yeah.
I didn't even think of him.
Yeah. He's like, that's what I dug down for that guy.
You want to talk about a fall from grace. Mr. Perfect's previous manager, Bobby Heenan.
And then the coach, like, one of the worst things ever.
I think on those grounds alone, and he was on pay-per-view.
Yeah, he was on. That's why I was like, why would he not easily rank in there? Like, he's just, I know it wasn't long, but really, coach? Like, what? Like,
he didn't help Perfect at all.
Yeah, he and he's there for his worst good. Moment, like when he loses. Like, is he ever there? When I've never even seen him with somebody who wins, ever. Like,
he was the Beverly Brothers' first manager before the Genius.
Mm.
But who cares?
Yeah, who
it's the
who
Beverly
cares?
Brothers.
Yeah.
You want to go in on Coach here?
I'm all in on Coach.
All right, you know what? Let's go in on Coach.
die.
He's somehow the first one.
Like, fine with me. I don't care.
He somehow beat Ellering into the Death Valley that time.
As he should. I mean, at least Ellering managed the Legion of Freaking Doom, the Road Warriors. I mean, come on.
Well, they're not even that amazing, but that's a story for another
day.
Yeah,
okay. Like, you know who I never liked as a manager, Quinn? I don't know if he's Death Valley material.
Who?
Johnny V.
Johnny V?
He sucked as a manager.
He kind of sucked.
Didn't he?
Yeah, but he managed the Dream Team. He has had a couple of funny lines. Like
a couple of funny lines as a commentator, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
He stunk.
He did stink.
I don't know if he's like heading to the desert just yet, but he's on his way.
What about Oliver Humperdinck?
Well, I think you don't like him because you're mainly familiar with his WWF run.
What what other run would you say?
Wasn't he in JCP?
I've seen him in other things. I'll put it that way.
And he was Big Daddy Dink in WCW.
Okay. First of all, his name is Big Daddy Dink. Do I need to say anything else?
Okay, fine.
Come on! He's awful! Like,
you know what he kind of is?
Like, why does Bam Bam Bigelow need him? Like, ever? Is his magic wand helping him do cartwheels? Like, I don't get what he is. Why does he have a magic wand? Does he have magic? I don't get it. Like, I don't get it.
Before we put him on there, though, is there anyone else? What about Frenchie Martin?
Oh, ooh, that's a good one. Frenchie Martin's pretty...
He was even worse than Oliver Humperdinck.
What? We're just throwing names out, but what about Hiro Matsuda?
Yeah, what was that about? Why did he manage the Horsemen?
Exactly. This is what I was saying about the... This is going to be harder than the other one.
It is.
Like, seriously, because, holy crap, there's, like, a bunch of garbage. Like, Clarence Mason... I don't think he's that bad.
He's not the all-time worst or anything.
Yeah.
You know what, though? Seriously, Hiro Matsuda might have to qualify.
Yeah, I just don't know what he's there for. Even Ric Flair himself has commented on, like, why. Like,
not that Dylan was some special prize, but at least he was the Horseman.
At least he knew how to talk.
And
Hiro Matsuda
talk.
Literally didn't know English.
Yeah.
He was just like some mysterious Japanese backer, financial backer, because there was like, it was at the time when like Sony and Samsung and companies like that were rising in the 80s, and it was like people were afraid of that.
Yeah, the Japanese.
Yeah.
Weird.
Do you even think, I always forget his name, the bald guy in WCW, Gary Hart. I don't think he's any good.
He's okay.
I like him as a person and as like a wrestling insider. But I don't, like, really see the appeal of Gary Hart.
It's better than frickin' Paul Jones.
You hate Paul Jones.
He sucks!
Actually,
he
Paul
sucks.
Jones and Gary Hart are kind of on the same level, if you ask
Gary
me.
Gary Hart is on a better level.
What?
Paul Jones is bullshit, Quinn. Come on.
Why is he bullshit?
What did he do that was good? He managed Pez Watley.
Yeah, he turned Pez Watley into like a goody two-shoes. Shaska Watley.
Garbage.
And he looked like a safari guy.
What about Lauren Davenport?
Yeah, well, I don't think that... she doesn't meet the notable enough thing.
No one from USWA.
No, that they can't make it yet. Just yet.
Is Gary Hart worse or better than Paul Ellering?
They're like on the same level of bad.
With Paul Jones?
Okay, here's the thing with Jones, Hart, and Paul Ellering. Is that they're all a lot of talk, but like nothing really like makes, like, I don't get what they're saying at the end of the day. Like, besides my guy's gonna win, there's no like anything to them.
Do you consider?
And I think people will probably argue against Gary Hart, like especially our listeners.
I think he's okay.
I don't think he's that amazing, but you know what? For the sake of like, we don't agree on that. He just won't be in. Who did we have on this already? Harvey Whippleman. There's so many names that are bad. Like, I'm trying to remember who the first one was.
Coach John Tolos was the first one.
Somehow he's on there.
I'll tell you what, though. I think Frenchie Martin is pretty bad.
Yeah, Frenchie Martin's pretty awful. I mean, like, what? Only thing he managed was Dino Bravo, and he sucks.
Or do you want to say Oliver Humperdinck?
I hate both. I'll give you Frenchie Martin. He's not good at all.
Frenchie Martin's one of the worst managers.
I don't even remember ever hearing him talk, ever. Like, he just has that stupid flag and does nothing.
He has a stupid flag and does nothing.
Sometimes wrestles, and then gets his butt whooped, and then that's it.
Yeah. So is he on there?
Yeah.
He's on there.
Die, die, die.
So we've got Coach and Frenchie Martin, two out of four, 50% of the way there. So who do we have heading to the desert? Paul Ellering's on his way.
He's on his way.
No, Oliver Humperdinck is on his way.
Paul Ellering's on his way because, as I'm just reiterating the point, is that he should not be there at all, but he begs to be there at the same time.
Personally, Quinn, I think Ted DiBiase was a bad manager.
He was a bad manager, and none of his guys ever really did anything.
His stable sucked.
At least he could talk and stuff.
What about Teddy Long? He's besides Doom.
I know that Teddy Long is going in the Hall of Fame this year, and I feel bad putting him in this, but he has to be up for consideration.
He was pretty crappy.
Yeah.
Wasn't he? He was a pretty bad manager.
I mean, he's managing like Craig Pittman and like
Ice Train. Why?
Yeah.
Why would you manage Ice Train?
Bunch of junk. Mark Henry when he wasn't good.
Mark Henry was always good. Let's not get ahead of ourselves
here. I think 99 Mark... No, not 99. Like, 02 Mark Henry is awful.
Okay.
Like, that's when he gets bad, but...
What about the guy that managed Cully, Indian Eric Bischoff?
Eric Bischoff? He's no good.
You know who
I don't know if he's, like, up there in the bad of, like... So, wait. Somehow Humperdinck's not in, right? Come on, Joe.
Oh, you know what? He does suck.
Yeah.
Oliver Humperdinck does suck.
Enough with the consideration about Humperdinck. He's in.
He's in?
Yeah.
All right, so Humperdinck is in.
Yeah.
Die, die, die.
So we are down to one more then.
Yeah.
Consideration here, Johnny V, but you're not really too sold on that.
I'm not sold on the Johnny V. I think he's just enough competent.
All right,
like, yeah.
Fine. Paul Ellering is on his way to the desert.
Yeah.
Paul Jones. Gary Hart.
I'll take Gary Hart off the list. I can deal with Gary Hart.
Then let's take
Kabuki and all that.
If we're going to take Gary Hart off, we have to take Paul Jones and Paul Ellering off.
I can't believe Paul Ellering's going to get away with this. It's really upsetting to me. You know that, right?
He managed the Legion of Doom.
So? Teddy Long managed Doom, and he's on his way to the desert. I feel like you could manage one good person, but if everything else sucks, then why should you be considered good?
What about that guy, not the Jackal, the original manager of the Truth Commission?
What guy?
Commandant? Oh, I have it.
The Commandant?
The Commandant.
Oh. Ooh.
Oh, you know who's worse?
But the Jackal is awful.
Yeah, you know what he is. I know everyone's like, oh, Don Callis, he's so smart. Fuck him. Sorry, he's not that good.
I don't even think James Vanderbeek is any good. Or what was his other name?
I don't know.
Sinister Minister? Yeah, that...
With Mortis and all that shit. He sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, come on!
But what about What about General Adnan?
Oh, you got it. You know what? I was thinking of him when I was thinking of this topic this week. He is bad.
You want to put him on there?
Oh, my God.
Come on, he's worse than Ellering Quinn. He is. I'm sorry.
Is he worse than, like, the Truth Commission guy, though?
But that was so brief, so
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, but the Jackal, though.
The Jackal is like modern-day Paul Ellering, where he's like, I am smart.
Yeah, and he also was the that guy in ECW that, like, censored them.
Cyrus.
Or something. Cyrus the Virus. Yeah.
I can't put Jackal on there. I can put General Adnan on there,
but can
honestly.
You put Jacqueline on there?
No. Worse than General Adnan?
Yeah. Okay, I give up. General Adnan.
You think so?
He's just...
He managed the world champion.
We don't even have to, like, talk too much about him, because somehow he managed the world champion, and he was awful.
He was awful!
He just, no, get him out of
is
here.
Is he really? Okay, so.
I think he's in there.
General Adnan is on the list.
Die, die, die.
So that's it. We've done it. We went to Death Valley.
Who do we got here?
I don't even care. We have.
General Adnan.
John Tolos.
John Tolos, the coach.
Frenchie Martin.
Frenchie Martin.
And Oliver Humperdinck.
Oliver
Humperdinck.
Somehow Harvey didn't make it in, which is good for him.
Good for him. Good for Ellering. He squeaked on by.
He's so lucky.
Gary Hart. If Gary Hart didn't exist, Ellering would be in the thing. But that, I think, is still a pretty... Maybe controversial, folks. Let us know what you think.
Yeah.
Obviously, reach us.
And if we missed anybody, like, this is one of those cases where, like, there are so many managers. There's probably somebody we missed.
Absolutely, I'm sure.
Like, I thought we almost missed Slickster when we were just talking about good managers.
I just didn't think of him as one of the best ever. I love Slick, but he doesn't belong on Rushmore. But folks, let us know what you think belongs on Rushmore. Let us know what you think belongs in Death Valley, and we will be back. Right after this.
Introducing a Coors like you never knew before. New Coors Extra Gold.
This ain't no quiche eater soda pop beer, you'll agree. Cause no beer's as bold as Coors Extra Gold. No beer's as bold as Coors Extra Gold.
And only Coors could make it so easy drinking.
Yeah, this is bolder, colder beer the way beer ought to be. One taste you'll be sold. Grab hold of a gold.
You're listening to Our Vantage Point, the retro wrestling podcast, the fastest growing weekly episodic retro wrestling audio podcast in the world.
And welcome back, wrestling fans, to Our Vantage Point, the retro wrestling podcast, episode number 23. Thank you so much for being with us this Monday, March 20th. We are ready for our last segment. Quinn, we are reviewing something.
Yes, we are.
We are. And Quinn, I know you've been champing at the bit for this.
Yeah, that was the right way to say it.
Thank
and
you.
I have been, because this is something that I feel like I remember seeing on some channel that I don't know what it was, but I couldn't figure it out for years until you had pointed out that it was possibly this, and it was definitely this.
It was definitely this, and this came from our good friend of the show, Richard Land. He actually specifically found and uploaded this crap
for
us.
The backstage story with this is I had said, Joe, wasn't there some weird, like, it was like WWF,
right,
but, like, it was not, and, like, I can't find it on the internet. I don't know what it is. And then you had said, I think it's AWF. And then we found some, like, weird, like...
clipped up.
There's one that was, like, 2 hours or something.
It was weird, yeah.
Yeah,
it
wasn't the right thing.
No.
And then so we had asked Richard, Richard, do you know if you can get your hands on any AWF? And he'd never heard of it either at first.
And he found it.
And then he just finds it.
So, folks, as we've always said now, Richard Land is one of the best places to get obscure old wrestling stuff,
and especially in the vein of more WWF, I think Richard tends
to go. That's his specialty. Yeah, definitely. So that's Richard Land on YouTube, L-A-N-D. If you're listening to us, you probably know who he is, but maybe you don't.
Yeah.
So we just want to give him that shout out.
Go look it up. He's got some good stuff up there.
Yep, and a frequent listener and commenter of our show. Big friend of the show. Very thankful to have his support.
Yeah, and so, I saw Land in the Discord chat, if anybody wants to ever talk.
He's there.
He's there. So
in the jolly old UK.
Yeah.
Folks, what it is that we're reviewing is AWF Warriors of Wrestling.
Yeah, that's the name of the show, Warriors of Wrestling. Yeah. This was like an hour, like a normal Cindy
type
thing.
It's like a Cindy length. But no commercials.
I guess notably, it's like... It's so weird because it's just like the WWF.
It,
like,
really is so similar. We'll get into
like it.
Yep.
Too, yeah.
So this is their debut TV episode from February 25th, 1995. Now, folks, what was the AWF?
Yeah.
the American Wrestling Federation was an attempt to, let's get another frickin', you know, thing here on TV to try to capitalize and or compete with WWF and WCW.
You had said to me,
yes,
off show, you had said something about how, like, they were trying, you thought they were trying to be like the number three to replace the AWA.
In a sense,
Something about this feels like they want to be like WCW, like they want to be
number two.
At least number two.
And that could be true.
Yeah.
It was founded by a guy named Paul Alperstein or something like that. I have his
name
here.
He's in the show.
And we'll see him later. Basically, it was founded a little bit before they actually got TV. It was founded in 94. It lasted until about late 96. It did have a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
It never achieved national prominence where people were like talking about it and stuff.
Like I said, it was on something, and that I can't figure out
what
that is, but like I know I saw this on TV. Like
I believe you. Yeah. I believe that. I never personally saw it, but I knew about it from the Aptermags, which, you know, don't call them the Aptermags.
Don't call them that.
Don't call them the Aptermags.
That's not what they're called. But anywho.
So let's get into the show. So our opening is Sergeant Slaughter, and he says our choice for wrestling should be the AWF.
And your choice for professional wrestling should be the American Wrestling Federation.
Why? There's no episodes to go off that. Like, what, because Sergeant Slaughter's there? Like,
yeah, great.
That's the thing with this, is like, a lot of these guys are old. Like, in 1995.
They
like,
are, you're right. Like, you're totally right,
that,
Quinn.
That's the big thing with this.
Like, Hercules in the intro.
Yeah, but not the good Hercules. Like, the power and glory kind with the mustache.
The greasy.
Yeah, and he looks kind of fat. Like, that Hercules.
Now, despite fat, greasy Hercules, the intro itself, Quinn, pretty good?
It's okay. I mean, it's on par with 1995. Let's
okay,
put it that
fair
way.
Enough,
like,
though.
I'm not going to say it's like, I think, like, that era, like, the more unique intros to me were, like, the Nitro intro, where there's, like, stuff happening.
Fireworks.
Fireworks
know,
in, like, an abandoned city or something. Like, those are more, or the Saturday night one with the
the doors.
The, like, mechanical crap. Yeah. That's, like, actually interesting.
So, Quinn, during the intro, we see a clip of Santana, and you say to me, he looks like a school teacher.
Yep.
And which
he is a school teacher. And
in fact,
the thing is, he's starting to look like one here. Like, he doesn't
95.
Look like the Santana of the early 90s, late 80s.
No. In fact, we know people that have had him as a teacher.
Yes, we do, because he is a school teacher in New Jersey.
Suck a son in New Jersey.
Yeah, so I always thought it was interesting. We know somebody that actually was in his class because they were from there, and they moved where we are, but like, yeah.
Interesting,
that,
right?
That is very weird. Like,
so, Quinn, you say to me, I love this quote, I feel like this is Heroes of Wrestling, the Federation.
Yes, seriously, Joe, like, after watching this, it's Heroes of Wrestling, it's better than Heroes of Wrestling. I'm not gonna...
It is. It's a lot better.
It's better, and they picked up the right old people, but it is still just a bunch of old wrestlers that,
it
like,
is.
And you're like... But they're treating them like they're...
Not old.
They're not old.
Right.
In fact, there's a comment later, but we'll
get to it.
Yeah.
So we're hosted by Mick Karch, who I had never heard of, but I will say
he was good. He was good. Yeah, he was fine.
And believe it or not, Terry Taylor.
Yeah, the Red Rooster himself is there.
And he's okay, too.
I'm Mick Karch, and I'm Terry Taylor.
And this guy named Billy Anderson is the ring announcer.
He looks like Ross from Friends, or like...
You
or
also
like,
said the Patriot.
He looks like the Patriot, too.
You meant Del Welks
Del
without
Welks,
the mask.
Yeah, without the mask. Or Wilkes, Welks, I don't
Whatever
know his
it
name.
Whatever it is, Wilkes. Yeah. So this match is scheduled for 3 rounds.
Okay. Hold on for a second. This promotion has some weird round system, right? And I know... Probably our UK fans will probably be more appreciative of it, but I don't understand this. Like, they're acting in this show like this is like a new concept, first of all.
Yeah, we'll get to
that. And later they do say it's from the UK or something.
Yes.
However, it's also from something called boxing, and they're acting like they're big innovators for like doing this. It's so stupid, Joe.
It's weird.
And there's storytelling in a match problems with it. Like, there's some matches where it's like there's a guy that's just squashing a guy, but like it goes to a second round for like no reason. But what that does in like a wrestling construction logic kind of way,
right,
it makes you not want the match to go a certain length.
Yeah.
And since the rounds are like 4 minutes each, it's don't want anything for somebody you don't care about. You don't want to see them wrestle over 4 minutes.
That's true, Quinn. And we will probably be able to elaborate more on those problems with the round system as we get into this.
I just wanted to set a foundation here.
Absolutely.
For the round system.
That was one of the things that the AWF did, is they used the round system. It was every normal match was 3 4-minute rounds. Title matches were 12 rounds.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know.
Did they say that on this?
No, I looked it up. And they were very big on the rules, which we'll also get to later. So anyway, our first match, as ring announcer Ross Geller tells us,
fine by me!
This is a great name, the Ultimate Destroyer.
Yeah, he just looks like
masked guy with like...
He's masked, but he looks like he just got done working out at a gym or something, because
like
he put his shirt back on over his workout gear.
And he's fighting Mr. School Teacher himself, Tito Santana.
With the happy music.
His music was so happy.
Yeah, it was.
Now, Quinn, you and I both noticed he has his Strikeforce hair, but he's got like an El Matador jacket, but like the... short tights.
Yeah.
But the boots are
He's got the El Matador boots with like black Austin style tights.
It's
like,
so weird.
It's really, and his hair's really fluffy.
And long.
Like he looks like he's getting ready to go teach school, like in a year or whatever he started teaching school.
Now, the best comment from the announcers here is that no one is more popular in wrestling than Tito Santana.
Sure. Hulk Hogan, I never heard of him. Or at 1995, like Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart. Like,
Diesel, even.
Yeah.
Now, Mick Karch goes on to say that this is the most innovative wrestling in the world today.
Bullshit. The only reason they think this is because of the rounds.
Yeah,
there's nothing innovative about this promotion. In fact, it's a complete ripoff of the WWF, like down to the look, feel,
the production,
the wrestlers.
Yeah.
Like,
you're right.
Everything.
You actually said to me also in the midst of all this talk from the announcers that something about the way this is filmed reminded you of WMAC Masters.
Do you remember that show?
I do remember that show. Can you explain it to
WMAC
the folks?
WMAC Masters, it was this weird like karate show.
On Fox.
Where like it was basically like Mortal Kombat, but like done like it was a wrestling show. They filmed it like it was a sport, but also it was like filmed, there was like fog machines and like you had to earn like medallions to get into a belt, and then the guy that had like half the medallions would fight the other guy with half the medallions, then win the belt.
It's kind of like the karate version of Lucha Underground in a way.
It's basically Karate Fighters, the TV show. You know, remember Karate
Perfect.
Fighters, the
yep.
toy?
Perfect yeah. description. So Mick Karch is a good announcer. I see this as the match gets underway, and the ref looks like Wade Boggs.
I know you said this. Yeah, I didn't really see it that
That's
much,
okay.
but yeah. I believe you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
The crowd, Quinn, you and I discussed this when we were watching it. It's kind of on par with like the WWF arena tapings at the time.
Again, not innovative at all.
Not innovative. It's not a smaller... Like, it doesn't look like a horribly small crowd.
Yeah, although they keep clipping to the crowd, and I can't tell if that's, like, generic other crowds.
Like, insert shots?
Because it doesn't look like it's part of the arena, because there's this big notable, like, pole in the... right hand
yeah there is
corner,
there's like some pillars,
but they never go near that in when they show the crowd. So I'm like, is this the same place? Like, how do you miss that? Like,
maybe Hercules comes in and pulls down the pillars
the pillars of AWF instead of Rome this time.
So I say, you know, this match isn't bad at all. Dare I say it's good? But Quinn, you wouldn't say good.
I wouldn't say good. It's competent is what I that was my actual quote.
Yeah.
It's not great.
Yeah, it's competent.
It's all jobber matches on this.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
you're right. And the clock for round one ticks down. Terry Taylor, here we go again, says it's such an innovation that he's never seen such a thing.
We see the clock in the right-hand corner, an innovation only in the American Wrestling Federation.
And he's never heard of boxing, I guess, because what? Like,
right, exactly. What do you mean? Plus, don't they say later they got this from England?
Yes! There's like an interview later where somebody says this. It's ridiculous. They just stole everything. Everything is stolen, Joe.
Either from WWF or freaking England,
you know?
No
or like probably some WCW influence.
Maybe.
And even their logo is stolen from like the USA Network. Like, everything is stolen.
Now, this was really weird. So as round one ends, Mick Karch says that Tito was about to do the flying burrito.
Well, no question he had that flying burrito in mind.
Okay. Flying burrito is a derivative of the joke flying jalapeno, which, like, Jesse used to call the move in WWF.
Or Bobby, one of
them. Both called it. And so the fact that they're calling it the flying burrito here, they're just ripping off the WWF announcer's jokes.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, come on with the ripoffs.
Why is it called that anyway?
Yeah.
If that's really its name, that's fucked up.
That's not the name. I don't know,
it
actually. They never clarify.
That's the point.
Santana doesn't say what it is.
No! Hmm. So anyway, so this is even more boxing-like. They have stools in the corner for the rest
period. They're just screwing around with the innovation talk because literally it's boxing.
Yeah, and then...
And I was like, why do you need rest for a jobber match, right? And this brings me to my point about how, like, how is this fair to the superstar, right?
Right.
Usually, like... I understand that the superstar is just supposed to beat him and that, you know, obviously they're at an advantage, right?
Right, because they're the superstar.
However,
and
if you give the jobber a rest period, shouldn't the jobber have a way better chance of winning if he could just survive the other stuff?
Maybe that's the point.
Yeah, but that's stupid. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I don't even have to make many points. I mean, why should someone, just in a wrestling match, right, between two competitors,
yeah,
why should the worst guy be given, like, a catch-up chance or something? That's not competition.
It's innovative, Quinn.
They're, like, gimping it.
They are revolutionary. So Terry Taylor says, nowhere else in the world will you see a girl holding up a round two sign.
Oh, my.
You got a girl walking around telling you it's round two. Nowhere else in the world do you have that.
Again, has boxing. Not seen boxing.
Like, right. So Santana in round two here with his 1985 offense and the flying burrito. And yes, they call it that again. Gets the pin for round two.
And this is where I say, what was the point of the first round? It was a complete waste of time.
They could have just done that whole thing in one round.
Yeah, it's not like this crowd knows what the hell's going on. They could have just, like made the round longer, and nobody would have ever known.
Fair.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? You're right. They could have just stretched it a little bit.
Yeah.
So Tito horribly dances, and Terry Taylor says he's never seen him look better.
I've never seen him look older, honestly.
Now, I want to be fair, Quinn, and maybe you will as well. The production here is really good.
It's fine. Yeah. It's even better than ECW, which was like a contemporary. So
it's well lit, it's well shot, it's well
somebody
produced.
Somebody paid for this. Like, this was not somebody just like trying to make a quick buck.
No.
Even Heroes of Wrestling, like the production wasn't even this good.
No, this is like, really good.
Yeah, this is fine.
It really is. And so we throw this was blew my mind.
Yeah.
We throw to Ken Resnick.
Another former WWF interviewer. Yeah.
With Tito Santana. So, Quinn, I love this. I'm going to read your quote here. I have to. So, Quinn says, how did he get to the green screen so fast? He's still sweaty. And then Quinn pauses and he's like, you think they just poured water on him? And I think that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, because there's another one later where it's somebody just wrestled and they aren't sweaty.
Yeah.
So
Santana says you need to be able to wrestle in the AWF.
And I say, shouldn't you be able to wrestle when you're in a professional wrestling federation of any kind? If you're in ECW, I would hope you should be at least able to wrestle.
Isn't that like part of your resume?
Yeah.
Like wrestler.
They're really harping on this wrestling thing. Like there's these weird, like, it just feels like they're jabbing at WWF for being more like gimmicky or something.
Being cartoony, yeah, right. With the Lawrence Taylor thing going on and everything.
Right. Yeah.
So our next match is Billy Joe Eaton. What?
Yeah.
Maybe they wanted Bobby Eaton and they couldn't get him. Billy Joe
Eaton. He's kind of like Freddie Joe Floyd. I feel like he looked like that, didn't he?
A little bit. Yeah. I thought Sparky Plug.
Okay,
but he's fighting Greg Valentine.
Yeah,
with,
real newcomers here.
With Rico Suave.
Oh my goodness. This guy, had he been more notable, he probably would have made it into the Mount Rushmore Death Valley thing.
I love what you said, Quinn. Why does Valentine need a manager wherever he goes?
I've had this discussion with you, but why when you're like 100, like Greg Valentine here, why do you need a manager because you're a big name? You can get whatever you want.
Right.
Secondly, why would a manager waste their money on a guy that's career is like just about over?
Exactly.
Like, it makes no sense.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Why would you want to manage 1995 Greg Valentine?
I wouldn't.
Rico Suave looks more like Cheeto Suave. Fat guy.
That's a good one.
And then Quinn, you said to me, his name looks like it should be Tony Salami.
Yeah. I mean, he's just, the gimmick is basically like New York, like greaseball, like character.
Used car salesman-y.
He looks, his hair looks fake.
I think Valentine looks the same as always. 50.
I think if I took Tony Salami's hair and just like ripped at it, it would come right off.
Okay, fine.
Because his eyebrows don't match his hair. That, some people did you don't. Notice this?
Well, when you bleach or dye things.
Well, whatever, Salami.
Terry Taylor mentions that the referee actually keeps score the whole match.
So that's why these rounds matter. But like, do they ever say what the score is ever? So then again, like if it doesn't go three rounds, then the score just, they don't tell us.
They're innovative, Quinn.
They don't make sense is what they are.
Now, the saddest part here is I'm pretty sure that Billy Silverman is the ref. Mm-hmm. And that's just upsetting to me.
Isn't he in, like, everything?
Yeah. Like, it's just sad that he had to, like, lower himself to this.
I can't believe he made it here.
I know. Billy Silverman, yeah, of all people.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is a match scheduled for three rounds, but Valentine needs four rounds just to get warmed up.
Okay, again, with the ripping off WWF, that is something that Gorilla used to always say about Valentine, is that it takes him 15 minutes to get warmed up.
Exactly.
And, of course, that's exactly what they say here.
Yep.
How is there no, like, copyright issue with any of the... Everything is a ripoff.
There's a really good one about that a little bit later, okay, with the theme song, remember?
Right. Oh, yes. Okay.
So Suave is on a cell phone, so I guess he's Paulie Dangerously, and Terry Taylor says AWF has great technology. He's in like overshill mode, yeah, on this show, I
well,
swear.
Well, I will say their technology is kind of there because in wrestling terms, meaning that it's shot well.
It is.
The lighting's good.
It
like,
is.
They have like green screens in 1995.
It's
like,
just a funny time to say
yeah,
when
it
he's on
weird.
A cell phone.
Yeah.
So then we cut to Chris Adams in the Warriors corner. It's an insert promo.
Yeah.
And he says the AWF is the Alternative Wrestling Federation.
And then I say, it's just old people. That's all this is.
Pretty much. I mean,
this is where Chris Adams says that, like, they stole this. Like, the
basically,
round thing.
Yeah, that's
like,
what he says.
Yeah, he says, I've been wrestling in England for, you know, blah, 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 and and we're used to the round system here, so I'm happy to be in the AWF.
Yeah.
What?
What?
So it's not innovative, then.
Exactly.
He just pokes a hole right through
yep,
their logic.
He sure does. So Eaton gets some token offense, but other than that, this is the Valentine show. It's a pretty boring show. It's a Greg Valentine match, for crying out loud.
Mm.
Figure four gets the win, and then Quinn, you say to me, thankfully, we didn't have to wait for a round two with this shit.
Okay, yeah. I said that, and I also noted, why the hell is Tito Santana the, like, fast wrestler?
Yes.
Like, go two rounds, but Greg Valentine, the guy who they note takes long to get warm up, it only does one round.
I know. Weird, right?
Yeah, it's very weird.
It should have been reversed. I agree with you 100% there.
Makes no sense.
Our next match is Sonny Rogers.
I swear I've seen him before.
You know what? You said that at the time. I didn't bother to look him up, but
nor should you.
I feel like I know the name. I feel like I've seen him. Now, we didn't recognize this man because of his baggy pants
and beard,
but he's fighting Tony Atlas.
Yes.
And the ref, by the way, is very fat,
but he looks like Lefty from Lucha.
Or maybe a really young Chief J. Strongbow.
Yeah, we were debating, but yeah.
So we think Atlas is the heel, but like everyone...
They never say.
Everyone booed Rogers during the intro. No one's really getting cheered.
No, they aren't.
Right? I mean, there's like no cheering in this match. Atlas throws Rogers around a bunch, and then, like, Quinn, you said to me, like, Rogers looks like he should be in the Rock and Roll Express.
He does! He looks closer to Bobby Eaton than that other Billy Joe Eaton does. He does.
And then we get Hip Toss City by Atlas, just a bunch of hip tosses, and Quinn, you just say to me, if this goes another round...
And then what happens?
Bear hug by Atlas at the 32nd mark, and Mr. Rogers, that's what Mick Karch calls him, which is funny. He says he's in the wrong neighborhood.
Stupid!
Mr. Rogers here eye gouges out of the bear hug and actually lasts the round.
And then I go, I'm sure the viewers really wanted to see Tony Atlas after the commercial break.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, this is broken.
Yeah.
Like, why do they pick the exact wrong people to do the round thing on? Like, it's stupid.
You're correct. Yeah. Atlas should have done a one-round squash.
Right, exactly. The people you want to see should go two rounds.
Exactly. We get an insert promo with Johnny Gunn, which is Salvatore Sincere, by the way.
Or what was it? Tom Brandy?
Yep. And he says next week, I swear he says this, he will housebreak the nation.
Tune in next week because you're going to see Johnny Gunn housequake the nation, baby.
I don't
Something
know.
Doesn't sound right about that.
Was he in the Smoking Guns? Was he like the
no,
third gun?
No, he was
gun?
Never in the Smoking Guns.
Should have been. With Tommy Gunn from Rocky V.
That's what I thought of when I saw his name, actually.
Johnny Gunn.
Johnny Gunn, Tommy Gunn.
I bet you that's where they got
they
it from.
They just rip, again, more ripping off. Yeah. I mean, he kind of looks boxer-esque.
Yeah, but
and this is in a boxing federation, so.
Couldn't they at least rip off a better Rocky movie than V?
I can't believe, like, even when we were watching it, now that we're doing the review,
yeah,
I just can't believe the sheer number of like ripoffs of everything. And on top, the kicker that they just keep talking about innovation. Like,
yeah,
it's ridiculous.
It's very broken.
Yeah.
Atlas finally wins, as Quinn predicted, with a press slam.
Yeah, he asked me right in the middle of the match. He said, what's his finisher? And I'm like, probably a press slam. Exactly,
yep.
His
yep.
finisher.
Falls on him for the pin.
Yep.
Back to, here it is, Ken Resnick with the AWF president and in real life, the guy that owned it, Paul Alperstein.
Stein.
The best part is Ken Resnick is, why did you do this?
Yeah, that's like his first question,
yes.
Right? I asked the same thing.
He's like, so why did you found this? Like, why did you do this?
Yeah.
And he's like, I like the rules and no, there's no over-the-top rope moves and you can't hit the ref, all this crap. Then Ken's like, why are you doing this round shit?
And he says,
in the future, we're going to have house shows.
Okay, first of all, with this, he gave all the wrong answers. I don't want to hear in an ECW world about the rules and
Thank
the
you.
Top rope and
yes.
like all this nonsense. That's exactly not what the fans wanted in 1995.
Especially since this is 95. ECW in 95 was awesome.
Yeah, ECW very much exists and is very awesome right now.
And very much on TV.
And yes.
It's not like it's hidden.
They might be more places than this.
Maybe, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, I'd have to check, but.
Right, I love your quote, Quinn. Resnick looks like he has more money than the owner.
Yeah, he does. He's got like gold rings on and like yeah. a nice suit and tie.
The owner looks like shit.
The owner just looks like this whole operation is a hassle for him.
He looks more like Larry Appleton from Perfect Strangers. So we go back to ringside, and this is great. From Charlotte, North Carolina,
Rick Thunder. And his opponent.
Nails!
And then I go, no! I thought we got rid of this guy. Damn it!
Nails! With an S!
Yes.
With an S!
Freaking Nails!
How is this not stealing the gimmick?
This is literally stealing. Like, I'm not like, a lot of people loosely use literally.
Yeah.
He is literally the same freaking thing.
He is. The only difference
is the S.
Is the S instead of the Z at the end of his name.
He's got the orange jumpsuit. It looks a little more haggard for some
reason.
I love
that you noted that, yeah. The last couple of years, yeah. It's like all he's been wearing.
But it looks like the same one from WWF,
it
but
is.
It just got crappier from like
from literally
like
wrestling in it, yeah. This is gimmick infringement.
Yes. Now, coming up, though, is one thing that the
yes.
only thing that they didn't gimmick infringe. This is actually, surprisingly, you can say this is an innovation that came from the AWF.
It is.
That it was used elsewhere. There's a turnbuckle cam 20 years ahead of its time.
Yes, there is.
That was surprising, actually.
WWE only recently started doing that. And I remember when we were watching,
we thought it was stupid.
No, you mentioned that it's much better than what WCW did.
Oh, with the ref cam on the yeah. Yeah, there was a ref cam in WCW where like Nick Patrick wore like a helmet with like a camera on it. Stupidest thing.
Really,
I think he had a cable hanging out of his head
it
too
was
on
horrible.
Top. Yeah. And it was like a hockey mask.
Now, Nail's hair, Quinn, you noted to me, is a little fluffier.
Yeah, and it gets like he comes out and it's like combed like normal, but as the
right.
match is going on, it's like he's just he looks like he got out of bed or something. Like it just keeps getting worse.
So all kinds of choking by Nails. And
now I want to say here, just
yeah.
when we start with the choking,
yeah,
didn't right before that Paul Epperstein or whatever, didn't he just say about the rules and how
yes.
we want the rules around here?
Yes.
The rules are so good.
Correct.
So go on.
So he Nails and Rick Thunder here get outside the ring. Nails launches from like 20 feet
yeah.
the stool that
into
you would sit
his
on.
Head.
Direct
like,
shot.
Like it hits him.
And then he hits him with a chair. And Quinn, you notice at this point, instead of mats on the outside.
Yeah, there's just like carpets. It looks like somebody like cut a piece of carpet in the shape that they wanted, which wasn't even the full thing.
Yeah, like the rectangle shape.
Yeah, and just left them there. It's terrible. It probably is not a mat, really. No. At all. It probably just hurts to fall on that.
Right. So then Nails chokes out Thunder with a cable. I gotta say, this was amazing.
This was like hardcore.
Nails was awesome.
This is what I said. First of all, I go, what the hell, Alperstein? Secondly, I said, maybe this rules thing was an excuse to get rid of Nails. And then I was also thinking, just on the side, was also like, did they just say the rules so that they could break them, essentially? Like, so that there would be this, like, conflict between Alperstein and, like, the rest of the competitors?
Possibly.
Like, that was, like, the reason?
This is episode one, so maybe.
Right.
But I do know this. We then cut to Ken Resnick again with, ironic or coincidentally, Sir Oliver Humperdinck.
Now, I will tell you, Joe did not know I was going to do the manager's Rushmore
before
this. This is
true. We had no idea.
So I was just trying to keep my mouth shut about Oliver Humperdinck here. But he is horrible.
He is.
This is where I realized what he was supposed to be, but they couldn't make him in WWF, is he's basically Captain Lou. Like, he's the same thing.
He's a ripoff of Captain Lou.
More ripoffs.
He really is.
You know how you know it's the AWF? Everything's a ripoff.
He says he's not a slouch.
And meanwhile, he's, like, fat and his, like, coat's open, showing his
like
belly
Lou
fat.
Albano.
Yeah, like Lou Albano.
He also says there's people unhappy to see him, and he's correct.
I am. I'm not going to sugarcoat it.
This is the best. He brings in his great new tag team, the Hangmen.
Oh, and look, he's got a tag team just like Captain Lou.
And they are basically the Blackjacks. Not the actual Blackjacks, but they look like the Blackjacks.
Yeah, they got cowboy hats on, but...
But with, like, dollar store masks on or something?
Terrible.
What is that?
It doesn't really make much sense.
Then we get Mr. Jobber himself, Ken Maguire, who...
Great.
Versus Sergeant Slaughter. You said to me, Quinn, remember how Slaughter was in his prime in 95?
Yeah, he looks like terrible here.
He does.
Like, he looks like he doesn't belong here.
And I know this pissed you off. He's handing out mini flags to everyone in the crowd.
Yeah, what does he want everyone to be? Like the Rougeau brothers or something? Like, and it's the cheapest gimmick to get everyone to root for him.
Because, I know.
First of all, kids in 1995, they probably look at this guy and are like, What?
Who's
like,
this old man?
Well, they know who he is because he was on G.I. Joe toys only a couple years prior.
Fine.
However, he doesn't look as cool as his G.I. Joe toy. He just looks like an old, like, accountant in army fatigues.
Exactly. So this jobber here, Maguire, he has very pink tights, but not in, like, that cool Bret Hart way.
They're all the way up to his, like, belly button.
Yeah.
Like, but, and it's making him look more fat. He looks kind of like Adrian Adonis in those tights, like, actually.
I think you said Playboy Buddy Rose,
Playboy
too.
Buddy Rose, yeah.
And then we cut to, and I shit you not, General Adnan. Seriously?
Yeah, one of the Death Valley managers.
Right, that's two of the Death Valley managers are on this show.
He's Sheik Adnan or something now.
He's back to the Sheik, gimmick, and he has no mustache.
And now he's mad at Sergeant Slaughter, so now we're carrying over gimmicks from the WWF.
Right!
Nothing is unique.
Nothing's unique here. You're
Other
absolutely
Other than that
right.
camera thing, nothing.
That's right, and this match is shitty. It's not even a good squash.
No.
Quinn, you were saying here, because we were looking at this horrible jobber, that the WWF even had the best jobbers.
I don't know how WWF did it, because even compared to WCW and AWF, of course, and even ECW, like...
Mm-hmm.
I don't get why their jobbers are, like, good. Like, I don't know how they do it. Like, I guess it's just that's, like, the peak of, like, where you can go if you're a jobber.
I guess
it's
so.
Like, I want to be a jobber in the WWF.
Why not? Cobra Clutch gets the win. Quinn, you said to me, like, are we sure these matches are 4 minutes?
Yeah. Yeah, because this one seemed longer, right?
Yeah, and Slaughter's hair was way too puffy.
Yeah, very puffy. And even, like, his hair color didn't look right.
But then we cut to Resnick, and then he brings in Slaughter, and Slaughter's hair is shorter.
Yeah, so I guess that water theory was correct.
Yeah, remember, Quinn, he's all happy about the Sergeant Slaughter is all happy about the rules.
Yeah, and I said, why is he happy about the rules? This guy's famous for a boot camp match where all the rules are... not
right.
applying to it.
And he's like, oh, I'm so good. Yeah. Rules,
It's great to be here in the American Wrestling Federation where they finally brought the rules and regulations back, and I'm happy for President Paul Alberstein to do that.
So our last match, Bobby Bradley. I think that's Bob Bradley.
Yeah.
The same guy. This is great. Versus the Coco line himself, Coco Beware.
He's main eventing. Now, this is where I said to you, I was like, okay, the only reason I knew about this was because I was flipping channels and saw Coco Beware Wrestling.
I'm sorry.
And what I mean by that is that this is my memory of this that I faintly remember flipping. I saw Coco Beware Wrestling in what looked like the WWF, but I knew it wasn't the WWF because it said AWF.
Right.
This might be the match.
Maybe it is.
Like, I don't know. Did maybe I catch the first episode of this by accident?
History might have been made, Quinn.
Yeah, maybe that's why they went out of business, because I watched.
This is the weird thing about this Coco thing. He's got his high-energy pants, but, like, his 80s blonde
right,
hair.
He's got the blonde kind of strip.
This made me, like, quizzical.
Yeah.
The crowd chants, "Whoomp, there it is."
Do they think he's met on a mission? I don't know, because they were around then.
I know. That's weird. Mick Karch calls this a federation with wrestlers who were good like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
The most unique and innovative wrestling.
Yep.
Again, they're trying to hammer that point home.
I don't know if, like, it almost seems like they are, like, compensating for, like, they know it's shit.
Maybe.
Like, and they just are like, we have to say innovative so people think this is, like, new or something.
Right, right.
Like, I was getting excited because I thought Tony Atlas was someone I never saw before from far
we
away.
We couldn't recognize him.
And then I find out it's Tony Atlas and I'm like, geez. Like, you know, there's nobody on this that is not a former WWF guy.
This is true.
But interestingly enough, everyone is in the Hall of Fame.
Except Nails.
Yeah, except Nails.
Thankfully.
Yeah, I think Tony Atlas is in the Hall of Fame.
I think he is. By the way, Frankie's at ringside, in case you were worried. So, Quinn, you then, I like what you said here.
Yeah.
You started to pontificate a bit on how this is kind of the reverse, or maybe the result of how when Vince took over the territory system.
Yeah. So what I was saying to you is, this is what happens when you take over a territory system, and there's, like, all these stars, right? When you're done with all these stars, they're still stars because they were the stars of each of their own territory. So what do you think would happen once you don't need them anymore? Of course, they're going to go form their own thing to get a paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what happens. This is the reverse of the territory system devolving.
You're absolutely right. Because, you know, besides the jokes we're making about them being old, and they were, all past their prime.
Too old.
Exactly. Like, they still had value.
Mm-hmm.
It's only 95.
Right.
It's not 2005.
They can get one more run. Even Sergeant Slaughter.
Even Tito Santana. Yeah. Coco Beware, these guys. So it makes sense. This is a match, as Kim Kardashian would say,
right.
And it's not a good one.
No.
So this is where, Quinn, really, you had a problem with the round system, because the clock, this is the thing that you said, and I think it's astute. This round thing makes you want to not watch anymore.
Right. It makes you pick wrestlers that you want to see wrestle longer, right?
Right.
So, like, if a guy is good and he only goes one round, you're like, oh, I wanted to see more of him. However, where its downfall is, if there's a guy you just don't care for, you are just hating the length of the match.
Yeah,
the whole
and
time.
Then you have a rest period.
And when
all
you're
this
watching
stuff.
This clock tick down, you're getting like, oh man, like, I gotta watch him in another round.
Right.
Like, this is why this is broken.
Exactly.
It just doesn't work for wrestling.
It doesn't work for wrestling. That's why it never succeeded here.
Yeah.
And then so we do go to round two, and I have to say, I'm sorry for Coco, but you know you're in sorry shape when you can't beat Bob Bradley in 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, honestly.
I mean, not that Coco's, like,
I know,
too
he's
far
a jobber,
out.
Too, though.
Yeah, but, like, I just don't understand, like, he just doesn't belong in this role. He should be jobbing to someone else.
Yeah, because,
like,
that would at least put someone over
or
a little
someone
bit more.
Young, maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Right?
They don't think they have any young people in this federation.
I haven't seen one young person.
No.
Even the jobbers seem old.
It's true. I think the youngest person is a ring announcer.
Mm-hmm.
So Bradley drinks some Poland Spring during the rest period. Then he picks up his stool.
Yeah.
Quinn, you say to me, yeah, that's what I think of this. It's stool.
Yep. I mean, that is what this is.
Speaking of stool, we cut to Mr. Hughes, and I'm not even surprised anymore with who they start bringing
this
in.
This surprised me because Hughes was in ECW in 1995. I think he was in February of 1995 in ECW. I might have to go back, but I've watched a lot of the old ECW, and I know that Mr. Hughes was there around this time.
Maybe they just had, they didn't have exclusive contracts.
That's what I asked you, I think.
Right?
I said, do you think they had...
I wouldn't think so.
Yeah,
it's the AWF.
Because I doubt that Coco Beware wasn't roaming the territories also, at this time.
I'm
saying
sure
he
was.
Yeah,
that's what I mean. Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah.
I'm sure he was. So Bradley kind of actually dominates the beginning of round two, but then Coco comes back, hits a flying dropkick for two. It looks like that was almost a messed up finisher.
Yep.
But the Ghostbuster, which is a brainbuster, basically gets the win for Coco.
We notice in the background, now they try to kind of hide it, I can tell, because they cut away, but they're playing his Birdman theme from WWF.
They are, like bird, blatantly.
Yeah, yeah.
Hit the bird, that
so
one.
So that, I think they knew they were stretching it. This is clearly taped, and they used the correct themes for the taped audience, but we were not supposed to hear that. But it's in the tape.
It's in the tape. Yeah. It was weird. So we cut finally back to Ken Resnick, who I like. He's like the best part of the show.
Yeah.
And he's with Rico Suave.
I'm just like, he's so generic.
He is.
He's so bland.
And very just bland. Like, I'm Italian. I'm not even an accent, but he's just like shitty.
He's just playing everything up, but not good. Like,
no, not good.
Yeah.
And Resnick, honestly, he looks like he'd rather be elsewhere. Like, he's above this.
He's
you
just
know?
Like, this is a paycheck, and I already made my money on like, the news or whatever he did.
He's just like grinning his way through this. And then Valentine wanders in from the left with a suit, but it's like a shitty 90s suit.
Yeah, it's like too big. Like, but that's how those 90s suits were. Like, everything was so he looks crappy in retrospect.
And he's got a pink stripy shirt.
Which is funny because if I recall, when Valentine did have a suit on in WWF, like in the mid 80s,
he had good suits.
He usually looked slick and awesome. Yeah. I mean, it seems like this 90s suit style doesn't really agree with his body type.
No, not at all. But then you asked me, Quinn, did he get it at Kmart? Maybe. Yeah. It's possible. It was
the
90s.
It looks cheap.
Yeah.
And he isn't making the kind of money he was making in the WWF.
No,
so.
Well, maybe Rico Suave will take him to the top, but I'd be surprised.
Yeah.
So that's our last segment, actually. To end it, we get it's basically, you know, the bookend of the opening with Slaughter. He's basically like, oh, you're dismissed.
Yeah, thanks, Sarge.
Thank you.
Like, I wanted to be long time ago.
So until next week, you're dismissed.
You know what was interesting, though, Quinn? Overall, it was an easy watch.
Yes, it was an easy watch, but how much of that is because we'd never really seen a full episode?
Partially.
I mean, like, honestly, like would you watch week two of this? Like, would you, after...
Of my own volition and not doing it for the review?
Yeah.
Maybe out of curiosity, but not, you know...
But you wouldn't probably go past two.
I mean...
Because you want to see Salvatore Sincere.
Yeah.
Wrestle,
I want to see the Blackhawks. What was their team name? Nightsticks.
I don't even remember.
What was their name?
Who
that
knows?
Tag team?
The guys in the mask with Pumperdink.
The Key Stealers. What was their name?
Who cares?
It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
I don't think
they made it, so.
I wouldn't want to watch any regular basis of this. I do know this because you and I also caught a clip of it, but I knew that around 95 or 6, even, because it went on for a while, Lord Alfred Hayes became the heel commentator.
What? Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
You know, you remember that?
Oh.
We watched a quick clip of it, remember?
We might have to find that. I don't know. I don't remember it at all, actually.
All right. Well, Richard Land, I have a challenge for you. If you can find one of the episodes...
Where Lord Alfred's announcing.
Where Lord Alfred is now the announcer, Quinn and I will review it at some point.
God, could
during
they
our
rip
reviews.
Off any more things? Like, I'm really trying to rack my head of stuff they did not rip off. Like, other than the camera... Like
everything else is a ripoff.
Like
or
everything,
an established talent already.
Right. Yeah.
So I mean, it's in one regard, I'll give them credit. They had a slickly produced first episode here. It was well done.
Yeah, it's fine.
It's a Cindy. If you compare it to what WWF was putting out,
you might like if you were flipping the channels and you didn't see like the logos in the corner or anything, you may think that this is WWF in 1995.
Maybe that was their intention.
Because I mean, the lighting to a T looks like exactly how a WWF arena would be lit.
Absolutely.
In 1995.
And with the exception of the one turnbuckle cam, all the camera angles, the way they shot it.
Everything.
Everything's
the entrance
the same.
Is similar.
Mm-hmm.
It's
absolutely.
That, like, that scaffold, but like a doorway kind of thing. Yeah.
Yep.
It's like,
with the neon lighting and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's exactly the same.
Overall, though, Quinn, what'd you think? Decent?
I mean, it's passable, like I said.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's like... It's not something that at the time I would probably even watch after I realized it's not WWF.
I understand what you mean.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
But overall, not bad.
Not bad.
Definitely not the worst thing we've ever watched.
Rip Off City. It's competent, but it's also just WWF Junior, basically.
Right.
Like, WWF Junior is like a term a lot of people use, but if this is like the most WWF Junior. Like, WCW didn't even approach this close to the same thing.
You know, like, what they really didn't? This, like, is almost all WWF guy. Actually, all WWF guys.
Yeah, with exception of maybe some jobbers that aren't.
No, I know. I'm just talking about the stars
here. Who knows? Some of these jobbers might have been in masks in WWF, too.
Maybe. Yeah, I didn't look up who anyone was, but some of these guys, like the Ultimate Destroyer. I don't know who that was. Yeah. A couple of these
guys.
And
I know they had Tommy Gunn, but he would eventually be in WWF, so.
Yeah. Overall, though, not bad.
Tommy Gunn.
Yeah, I know.
Jimmy Gunn. What's his name?
Tommy Gunn. No, his name Johnny Gunn.
Johnny Gunn. Yeah.
Doesn't matter. Yeah, does anyone care about Tom Brandy? I mean, come on. Anyway, folks, we hope you have enjoyed this episode, this review. It is spring. We have some great things coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Hall of Fame bites.
Yeah, couple of days from now, you'll have another Hall of Fame bite.
Yep.
Scott Keith will be with us soon.
Mm-hmm.
WrestleMania season. We're getting closer and closer to WrestleMania Sunshine.
Yep, WrestleMania Sunshine.
So we are looking forward to giving you some more great retro wrestling content, so be sure to check us out on the Twitter at OVP Podcast. You can email us at ovppodcast@gmail.com.
And the Discord chat.
Our website, ovppodcast.com.
Yeah.
And of course, our YouTube channel, Our Vantage Point, the Retro Wrestling Podcast.
Yeah.
Folks, thank you so much for being with us this Monday, March 20th for episode number 23. We will see you for the Hall of Fame Bites, and we'll see you again next week.
See ya.
Have a great one.
I've asked the president of the American Wrestling Federation, Mr. Paul Alperstein, to join me out here. And I guess first thing I should ask you, what would you like to be called, sir?
Paul will be just fine.
Okay, Paul it is. Paul, what way back first brought you to create this new American Wrestling Federation?
Well, I've been a fan of the sport of wrestling for many years. And I've seen the wrestling industry change dramatically. And I wanted to bring it back to the roots of its sport.
Now, Paul, I know you've made it very clear you are going to take a very hard line regarding following the rules here in the American Wrestling Federation.
Yes, the rules of the American Wrestling Federation will be enforced, and the rules are quite simple. First, there is no throwing anybody over the top rope. There is no touching the referee, and there is a break on a 10 count. If they do not do those things, they will be disqualified.
Well, Paul, I think a lot of us are glad to hear that, but I've been very curious, as have people all over the country. Why did you decide to institute the round system here in the American Wrestling Federation?
Well, I've been around wrestling for a while, and I've seen many different types of styles. And I thought that to create a system unique to this business would be something phenomenal for the fans to see.
Will you stop?